Welcome back. Still getting used to the studio after the long road trip. And some days, you know, I just want to be back out there. We're going to talk about something that I feel I need to talk about in this podcast. Suddenly, there is lots of talk online and in the news about something called fake news or manipulative content or the problem with the media not telling the truth and the need to do something about it. There ought to be a law or, you know, here's all these suggestions for suddenly what you're supposed to do about the media suddenly lying to you. We're going to talk about that in podcast 573. So I always start out the xgovernmentcars.com commercials by talking about mobile podcast command. But I'm going to give it a break and I'm going to talk about my three Crown Vics. My good friend Tommy Mischke just sent me a picture of me when I had my blue and white former Brooklyn Center cop car. And we all were summoned up to northern Minnesota someplace for some conference to try to convince us of something when we were on the air at KSTP. And it's Mischke wearing his hat, forcing me down on the hood of the, the police car. And I got to tell you, I had so much fun with that car. That was my first Crown Vic. Then I had a black one that I drove for years. That was my second Crown Vic, and the third Crown Vic still blows me away. This car now has 118,000 miles on it. I got it when it had 56,000. It still amazes me. This thing is a rocket. It's still a rocket ship. It's such a great car, and I can't recommend them enough. They still have the Crown Vics at xgovernmentcars.com. They also have the new Ford Police sedans. They have the Dodge Chargers. They have the Ford Police SUVs. They have Expeditions and Yukons. I mentioned in a couple of spots that he had an FBI Expedition that was super clean. If you need a car, if you need a loan, and you have a job, you're approved. So whether it's work trucks or whether it's a Yukon, an Expedition, an SUV of some kind, a Dodge Charger, Ford Crown Vic, Chevy Impala V8. If you need a car and a loan, you can get one because you're approved. And of course, ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without a lot of bull. They also have the three-day love it guarantee exclusively at ex-government cars. So what do you do? Well, you get your butt down to ex-government cars. They're now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. You can check them out online, of course, at xgovernmentcars.com or call them old school, 763-777-8782.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Well, I have a guide, but I don't know how I'm going to follow that. I don't know if I'm going to follow the guide or not. So this should be pretty interesting. I didn't want to just talk about this stuff without actually trying to organize my thoughts before the podcast. So I've got a guide. You might hear the papers shuffling around, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to follow it or not. During the election, in podcast after podcast, I talked about the quality of coverage. In fact, I had a certain view of the quality of coverage before the election, went out in mobile podcast command, started covering the primaries, and rapidly soured on the media and the way news is covered in this country. And I'm talking about the quality of coverage, news. What is news and how is it covered and how are we ill served? Because everybody is talking about it. This is now the new theme. It's one of the things I started talking about a long time ago, and now it is just, it's everywhere. Everyone is dissatisfied with the media. During the election, most of it was on the right. But now suddenly that Donald Trump has won a victory, the Republicans back in power, everybody on the left is now suddenly talking about how the media is biased or the media is fake or the media has caused this or the media did us wrong. What just happened? Well, first of all, the election itself, and I'm going to do this. I'm not going to go through all the states. This isn't some weird state by state recap of the election because that's not the point. I just want to go through some of the just three or four of the key states in this election, and because I want to make a point here. Because you're hearing a lot of talk about how suddenly now this is some kind of historic victory by the Republicans in 2016, and many of these judgments are premature. Why? First of all, we don't have all the information on the voting. Exit polls are great, but they don't tell you what the political science of this thing is. And if you've been listening to me, you know what I mean when I talk about political science. It, you know, you've got to sift through the vote totals. There's a lot of mathematic comparisons. There's a lot of work yet to be done on how people voted, where they voted, and all the things, what happened in the election, before we can say this is some kind of historic shift in Democrats becoming Republicans or, you know, women voting for Trump, and on and on and on. What happened was Donald Trump won in states where the polls showed very close races. In North Carolina, the final poll results just before the election showed a tie with Trump up by 2.6 for an average of about 1.5 point advantage in North Carolina. The final electoral result was 46.7 for Clinton, 50.5 for Trump. And I don't mean the Electoral College. I mean the final election result in North Carolina, which is 3.8, well within the margin of error for the polls. And the other thing to check is how individual candidates did in previous elections. Mitt Romney won North Carolina in 2012 by 2 points. Obama by 0.03. So in 2008, Obama only won by 0.03 and Romney won by something like 2 points. So Trump's victory was slightly better than Romney's victory in 2012. So is it historic? You know, he pretty much is on the watermark there. In Florida, despite a seesaw race in the polls throughout the election, Trump had been leading by as much as 4 points at the end of the campaign, averaging a 0.2 lead. And Florida, again, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth in terms of the polls. The final result at the election was Hillary Clinton 47.9 to Trump's 49.2, a 1.3 point victory. Obama won the state in 2012 by 2.8 points and in 2008 by 0.9. So she could have easily won Ohio. You know, the polls didn't predict a Trump or a Clinton victory. It was a toss-up until people actually voted. In Ohio, Trump led by tenths of points or a point or two from about late August, which I personally thought was significant. I drove through that area. I told you that whole trip out to Cleveland was to look at the Rust Belt and to talk about the Rust Belt, supposedly, the industrial center of America going back to 100 years. I said this would be the area that could very well decide the election, and I was right, because that's where people yearn for the old days when everybody was working at the plant. His last average of all the polls, Donald Trump, was almost 5 points. There was an Emerson poll taken right before Election Day in Ohio. Now, I'm talking about Ohio in this whole thing, which showed Trump surging with 7 points. The final spread in Ohio might have been a surprise to some people, but if you've been paying attention to the polls, you knew that he could have possibly won by 5-plus points. The final spread was Trump 52-1, Clinton 43-5, a spread of 8.6 points, almost 9%. It's slightly out of the average, but it is within the margin of error of the last polls taken. President Obama won Ohio in 2012 by 3 points and 2008 by 4.6 points. So it's not out of the question that a Republican would win Ohio. It's just that they thought that. They said things like, Ohio is now Democrat territory, and on and on and on. Pennsylvania, you know, I never considered Pennsylvania a Trump stronghold. In fact, I considered it really a Clinton stronghold, although I think I pointed out early on that I wouldn't say that it could go either way. But Pennsylvania was generally a state that went for Democrats. Obama by 10.8 points in 2008 and 5.4 points in 2012. Now, Hillary Clinton started her campaign with a huge lead in Pennsylvania, which nobody ever really went back and checked or revisited, because she led by only a point or two, which is, and this is emphasized, well below the margin set by President Obama in his two presidential campaigns. She led by two or four in most of the polls throughout the campaign. The last polls showed Trump up by one. The final result was Trump 48-8 to Clinton's 47-6, or 1.2 points. Again, well within the margin of error. New Hampshire and Michigan, both races close. Clinton took New Hampshire by tenths of a point. Trump took Michigan by tenths of a point. It took him a long time to double count everything. Even the Senate race was decided for the Democrats in New Hampshire by 1/10 of a point. It was impossible to predict outcomes in those states based on polls. In Michigan, Clinton had been leading, but the latest polls showed Trump ahead by a point. So it's hard to say that Michigan was a miscall on the part of anyone. Now I got to take a breath here, because I'm deep in these results. And when I'm trying to get the results through, I'm trying to roll through this to make a bigger point. So bear with me. In Iowa, Trump performed better than the polls showed. He won by 9 points. But it's important to point out that throughout, there was a Trump victory predicted in Iowa throughout that campaign. Some showed more a better margin and some worse. Obama won Iowa by nearly 6 points in 2012 and 9.5 points in 2008. So clearly there was a different result in terms of who voted and who voted for which candidate in 2016. Now, the polls missed Wisconsin, showing Clinton leading there by an average of 6.5 points. Trump won Wisconsin by just 1.5 points. Obama won nearly 7 points in 2012 and by nearly 14 points in 2008 in Wisconsin. And then we go to Arizona, where the polling average was 4 points. Trump won by 4.1. 4 and 5 points behind the averages set by McCain and by Romney in both the 2008 and 2012 campaigns. Okay. I hate to do that to you, but I had to. So why talk about this now? We talk about it because the assertion that the polls were wrong and did not, quote, predict a Trump victory is nonsense. I told you polls don't predict an outcome. They just simply show you a snapshot of where things are now. It is the media that took the polling information, didn't look closely enough at it, and told people that Hillary Clinton was expected to win because that's what the polls said. They didn't say that. They said it was going to be close. To illustrate a reality that political coverage in the United States is nothing less than slipshod. And that's the word. It's just slipshod. And this gets into the talks I've made and done on media, whether it's cable, broadcast, talk radio, print. They are all struggling to remain relevant and compete with Facebook memes and Twitter feeds and fake news sites and propaganda sites like Russia Today and conspiracy videos that are thrown together and put up on YouTube and right and left-wing websites that are often outbound linked to Drudge or Twitter, whether it's Breitbart or Laura Ingraham's news site, LifeZet, or Huffington Post. Yes, they're all biased. They all have a point of view. Most of the time, it's wrong. Whether it's 538, which is trying to make it sound like they're the smartest people in the world, or Vox, which has a snarky, nasty little point of view. Even Politico has a slant, but Politico is actually, for me, it's been pretty good. Did fake news and propaganda convince people to vote for Trump? Well, that's an interesting question. But before we get to that question, I'm going to tell you, when you work for a broadcast company, they are obsessed with social media. And they're obsessed with Facebook, and they're obsessed with Twitter, and they're obsessed with getting the hosts on Twitter and Facebook, and they're obsessed with following that stuff. And 10 years ago, they were obsessed with cable news. And I remember having an experience while I was on the air once, with having the TV on in the studio with Fox News on, and you'd watch the crawl, and some hosts wanted to watch CNN, and you'd watch the crawl, and you'd be seeing the crawl, and you'd think, boy, should I be talking about that, or shouldn't I talk about that? And I used to, and some hosts did this, where you would just look and see what was on Fox News, and you'd start talking about that to get calls. Well, here's the interesting thing. I found out, and I actually commented on this at the time, that really we're talking about two different mediums, and the things that were working on Fox did not work on the radio for whatever reason. So you have all of these broadcast executives who are completely obsessed with these different types of media. And they're scared to death that those different types of media are going to be more relevant than whatever it is that they're doing. So let's get back to this question of whether fake news and propaganda convinced people to vote for Trump. My feed from Facebook would have suggested the opposite, because my feed from Facebook, my friends and the people that I'm associated with are generally not Republicans. And so the stuff that I saw would have pushed me towards Clinton more than it would have pushed me towards Trump. In fact, some of the stuff I saw from so-called Republicans and, you know, so-called conservative sites were so disgusting that it actually pushed me away from those people. So we don't know what actually happened. We don't know. Did fake news? Who knows? You can't say that. You can't assert that fake news and propaganda from different sites got people out to vote for Trump, because we don't even know yet the dynamics of the vote. My suspicion is that despite all the Monday morning quarterbacking from both sides, women voted for Trump. That's one of the memes that's nonsense. They don't know that. Your vote is confidential. They don't know who cast what vote. They have to compare turnout to the actual votes. The polls lied. I've already dealt with that. No, they didn't. And the media lied. Let me repeat that again. The media lied. First of all, in general, by my analysis, neither candidate performed to the levels of their predecessor. Candidates in the Republican or Democratic Party, some places slightly better, Hillary Clinton certainly worse, but Donald Trump not so great. If Clinton had performed at or slightly better than the levels of President Obama, she would have won in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin and Florida, and she would be the president-elect. From the looks of things, just on the surface for me, being as objective as possible, voter turnout among Republicans was better, and among Democrats it was worse than in previous elections. And this is why, and it's the only reason now that we know that why Donald Trump is the president-elect. So now it's the media's fault, right? They did this. Certainly, the media in general deserves a lot of criticism. They have a penchant for predicting the future, which I've criticized 1,000 times. Stop telling me what's going to happen. And by the way, they're still doing it. Now they're telling everybody what kind of an administration Trump's going to have. They have no idea. They don't. It's slipshod. They don't know. They have no indication of why. All they can do is, you know, talk about who's going to get appointed to what cabinet position and what they've done before. And, you know, that's not a predictor of what the administration will do. But they're still telling you what's going to happen, and they're still developing storylines about what's going to happen. And let me talk about storylines in a second, because I'm going to come back to a point I made in an earlier podcast that I think is really interesting and deep, but we'll see. Well, you may not think it's deep, but I do. So what are they doing? Well, they're not reporting on the issues in the news because they're so concerned about competing with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube that they're just rushing out to find people who can go on television and say crap and have people react to it, because that's what they think of as relevance. Because doing more, covering the issues, finding out in-depth information about foreign policy or economics and getting both sides, well, that's just too hard. And it's too hard to find young people who are smart enough to look at both sides. And it's too hard to find editors that can guide people who might be cub reporters or not experienced enough or of a certain political view to make sure that they work to find both sides. In particular, media, which is supposed to be, or tells us, or purports that it is objective purveyors of news. And most of them do that. They say, we're fair and balanced, or we're getting you the real story, or we're telling you the truth, or whatever nonsense they come up with in terms of marketing names. What is news? News is defined as a listing of the events of the day, newly received or noteworthy information, especially about recent or important events, a broadcast or published report of said news, which is my emphasis, by the way, information not previously known to someone. Hey, that's news. News is not commentary. News is not gossip. News is not idle chatter or conversation. News is not a prediction of future events. So-called news stories and production packages. What's a production package? It's, you know, it's B-roll, as in video with someone talking over it, or an interview, all packaged up into a 2-minute or 1.5-minute, quote-unquote, story that is then, run on a cable channel or whatever. And cable channels will run packages all day long. So there's 7 or 8 packages that have been put together on the quote-unquote events of the day, which usually are some kind of commentary or something that happened, which I'm going to demonstrate for you here shortly. That is how they do what they do. And they're interspersed with discussion about it. So if a woman had a breast operation that went awry in Kentucky, there's a package on it. They show the package, and then they have a breast augmentation expert come on and tell what can happen and why is it that women feel they need to have bigger breasts. For the answer, we're going to talk to Daphne Jones, who is the chair of Women Against Big Breasts and whatever. And so that's the discussion. So-called news stories and production packages created for cable news or websites or radio news or television broadcast news should contain new information and should list the facts associated with the story. Here's an example. The 5 W's, the who, what, where, why, when, and sometimes how of a story. An accident occurred on the freeway today at mile marker 54 across from the mall. Four are dead, including a child. Police say a tanker spill earlier in the day left an oil slick which was not cleaned properly, causing a minivan to spin out of control, killing the occupants. Police also say they received numerous complaints earlier in the day regarding the spill. With details on this story and the controversy over the spill, Bernie Tafoya is live at City Hall. Then you go into Bernie, right? That is a news story. Now, here's how CNN would cover the same story. Domestic consumption of petroleum products has reached a peak this year. Tankers are transporting oil all across the country, and it's dangerous. In fact, just this kind of transport of oil caused a family of four to be killed recently in Akron. To find out more, here's Ann Hodges, spokesperson for Citizens Against Tankers, or CAT. We're also joined by Dave Haggard, president of the Tank Truckers Associated. Dave joins us by phone from Oklahoma City. Okay, that's how CNN would cover it. No discussion of the actual facts of the case, just this horrible, you know, B-roll of this accident with kids, milk, curds, and whatever spread all over the highway, and, you know, a close-up of a doll that's bloodied and glass and oil all over the place. And now we're going to talk about how terrible it is that we're transporting oil among, you know, in tankers and what all the trouble it causes. And what are you supposed to do? It affects you emotionally. You're supposed to get upset. And what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to go out and say, they've got to stop pumping all this oil. This is terrible. This country is falling apart. Now, apply that template to all political coverage, because what is happening is the lurid overtakes a recitation of the facts. So a recitation of the facts would allow you to say, well, here's what I think about foreign policy. I think we should do this, or I think we should do that, or here's what I think about economics. This is what I think should happen. But you would know the facts. So in this way, all news is fake. Why? Because you don't want to watch real news. You don't want in-depth reporting on the issues because people don't watch it. You don't want unbiased coverage. You want to be reinforced. You want to know all will be well. You want to know that your guy's going to win. You want to be told what you already know, that you will live forever, that you're sexy, that you're beautiful and strong and wonderful. It's entertainment, people. It's fantasy. The news is fake. It has been fake for a long time. It is a fairy tale. And the only antidote is to turn it off and read and begin to understand history and context. And I don't care if it's basketball or baseball or hockey or politics or, you know, nuclear science or how to make shoes or whatever it is, whether it's sociology, political science, political and military history, social history. And then to understand how history is written, rewritten, and revised. Here's what's going on. We are living in an Orwellian construct. You know, we leave our televisions on all the time. We don't have to have it forced because they're on all the time. We leave our screens on all the time. And then we think somehow in all this we're being informed. But what we are being fed is storylines, much like the people in the show Westworld. The androids are programmed with storylines. That is us. We are the robots. We are the ones being controlled by the godlike figures at the top who are part of the corporate structure, whether it's politics or, you know, news companies that feed us this nonsense, which is poison, whether it's on Facebook or cable TV and talk radio or online, and even in podcasts and internet radio and YouTube, depending on what you listen to and why you listen to it. The only way to deal with this stuff is to understand you are a warrior. You are a sovereign, and you have to protect the battleground of your sovereignty, which is your mind, and it's your personal liberty. And how do you do that? Well, you know, I learned a lot with the news cleanse. Turn it off and get away from it and find out what happens to your mind and find out what you think about most of the time and who put those thoughts there. So you have to deprogram yourself. You have to literally, you know, wipe your hard drive and reprogram new storylines, which are basically you. You need a healthy lifestyle. You need a developing sense, and you need to develop a sense of kindness and justice. You need some kind of disciplinary physical practice, whether it's Tai Chi or yoga or exercise daily, where you can be strong and you can be in good health and you can be a good citizen. You can be kind and good to your family and your neighbors and a useful person to mankind in general, and understand that political polarization is the game. This, you're the Democrat, I'm the Republican, she's a this, he's a that, he's wrong, she's right. This is all part of the game. If you don't like the lies, turn it off. I dare you to turn it off. Now, Facebook, everyone talks about Facebook. You know, they turn their TV off and they're still rolling through Facebook. Why do I go on Facebook? I go on Facebook for one reason, to promote the podcasts. And let me tell you a little something about that. Most of the people that come to these podcasts do not come from Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or any kind of social media. They come through organic searches. They come through, you know, search engine optimization and digital marketing. They do not come through social media. Social media in general is a waste of time. And the way I deal with Facebook is I refuse in general to interact. I post my podcast URL. I don't care if you read it. I don't care what. If you comment on something that I don't like, I'm going to take it down. If you say something stupid, right or left, I'm going to take the comment down. And if you could persist in saying stupid things, I'm going to block you because I don't want that on my page, period. Twitter is a joke. It's a cesspool. It's the same thing. I don't want to interact on Twitter. I just post stuff and leave it there because I don't care, because all it is people shouting at each other. Now, YouTube and Instagram are a little different. They're more fun. But what I've done with YouTube is I won't post political stuff on YouTube. That stuff I did on election night was all Facebook. I post travel videos on YouTube because they're fun and it's happy and everyone loves travel. Instagram is just great pictures. And if you say nasty crap on Instagram, you're gone. That it's that simple, because Instagram is a place where people can just go, hey, really cool picture. You know, hope you had fun, or great yoga pose, or really cool car. It's supposed to be a fun, relaxing thing. And a lot of people don't understand it. They want to go on Instagram and they want to snark. And if you do that to me, I'm blocking you. It's that simple. If you say something stupid, in my view, I'm taking you down. So you have to control your media battle space, period. And if you want to do that to me, that's okay, because that's the way it works. But the way that I would ingratiate myself with people is to try to tell you, not necessarily the truth, because the truth is subjective, but to get across to people what the battleground is and what is actually going on out there. And I'm not surprised by any of it. What do you read? What you say, well, what should I read? Read anything. You know what I'm reading right now? I'm reading a book that is extremely technical, that details the performance of World War II aircraft. So I read all about the P-40, and now I'm up to the P-47 and the P-51, which I'm very excited about. And half of the stuff I don't understand. It's diagrams, it's charts showing flight performance, and it's all these articles from pilots about how they fly and everything else. I don't even know how to fly, but I'm fascinated with learning more about these aircraft and what they did, because it helps my understanding of the air war in World War II, which is one of my areas of expertise. So, you know, and World War II history in general. So that's kind of neat. You can read classics, you can read source material, and you can try to understand the way the world works, the way human nature works, a little bit better. And as you know, I strongly encourage travel as an antidote to the separation of human beings, because I don't think there is Republican or Democrat. I don't think there is conservative or liberal. I don't think Republicans or Democrats could tell you why they're Republicans or Democrats. When they're enraged and painting F Trump on the highway, that's not the average Democrat doing that. That's just a bunch of, you know, people getting paid or people who didn't vote. And by the same token, the people that post pictures of Obama, you know, with arrows through his head or God knows what else, that's just some crank that's posting and doing stuff like that. They couldn't tell you what a conservative was, and they couldn't tell you what a liberal was either. This is all nonsense. And I've said 100 times that there's a political shift going on in the country. It doesn't necessarily benefit either political party. I would be happy to see the demise of both political parties and new parties come. But I think by the same token, I would say to myself, be careful what you pray for, because you might end up with two political parties that are very, very extreme. In any case, that is going to happen going forward. For me, government power, pernicious and dangerous and expensive, is going to be increased as much under Trump as it was under Clinton and Obama, just to serve different means. So we're going to be very happy about the application of government power to shut people up or to get people back across the border or to do things that we think should be done. If we disagree with it, then it's horrible and awful, and people in government are horrible and awful. The fact is, it's the same government. It's the same power, it's the same pernicious power to take your money at the point of a gun and create a bigger and more powerful government in which we expect more things to be done. This is why people are upset, because why can't they fix this and why can't they fix that and why can't the president do this? And every guy that takes office, it's the same thing. They're going to be a messiah. They get in there and they find out they're just a man or a woman. And they pick up the phone in the Oval Offices and then they scream orders and virtually nothing happens because it's a political office. Take some time and learn about the American political system if you don't believe me. And if you don't believe me, well, guess what, Trumpers? Look who's already in the inner circle in the administration, Republican moderates, which I told you about previously, you know, in other podcasts. So and told you long before it was even starting to be covered. Obviously, Rens Priebus is the chief of staff. You know, Paul Ryan is still the Speaker of the House. I'm sure Mitch McConnell will be confirmed as the Senate Majority Leader here fairly soon. And this idea that somehow this is going to be this breath of fresh air and he's going to do all these different things is nonsense. Because guess what? If you actually count it up, there's probably 200,000 or 300,000, maybe close to 1 million people involved in some way, shape, or form with the federal government. And the closer you get to power, the fewer it is. So if you want to talk about cabinet secretaries, Supreme Court justices, and who's going to run this office and who's going to run that office, there's not that many people to choose from that aren't already involved and already part of the centrist power structure. It's all about moving things slightly this way or slightly that way, unless you get one of those upheavals that often happen in American history, whether it was Abraham Lincoln and the whole thing with slavery, or whether it was Andrew Jackson and the move west, and on it goes. These shifts in the two-party system, which occur, regularly and unpredictably in the United States. And if you think that the people in 1836 and 1840 were any smarter than the people we have now, or somehow better informed, you're out of your mind. We have far more information sources, and the broadsheets and papers then were worse by exponential levels than anything that we're dealing with now. Even Russia Today or some Breitbart thing or some Huffington Post thing or the Daily Cause or whatever you want to call. So this idea that somehow we are so much better than those people, or those people were so much better than us, depending on what your point of view, is completely absurd. What do we want? That's really the question. What do we want? You know, maybe we don't want freedom. Maybe we don't want to be sovereigns. Maybe we want to be divided. Maybe we are robots and we would just prefer to be taken care of and be happy and live our little loop over and over and over again. But in any case, to end this podcast, I'm just going to tell you, we're not going to pass any laws that break the First Amendment. And what is the First Amendment? Congress. It doesn't say the president. It doesn't say the Senate. It doesn't say Supreme Court justices. It doesn't say governors. It says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. If you're running out on Highway 94, you might want to read the word peace. If you are jumping up and down and screaming about the things people are saying in Twitter, you might want to read the word speech. If you think we should have laws that, you know, force Fox News to stop saying, fair and balanced, perhaps you would want to read the phrase or of the press. It is pretty clear. You are. You have the right to say what you want. You have the right to watch what you want. You have the right to run a newspaper that says whatever the newspaper wants to say. And you have the right to assemble and to get a redress of grievances. And they are not going to be able to regulate the internet or the fake news sites or anything else. They are not going to be able to tell people they can't assemble, they can't say they're for freedom, and then turn around and say, but we're going to have some rules on this, that, or the other thing. Because guess what? People are going to do what they are going to do anyway. And you just don't want a situation where they just don't pay any attention to the law or of the government anyway, which actually, the way I read some of the polls lately, I think people have had it with the whole kit and caboodle. I think they are sick and tired of being told what to think by anyone. And the best antidote for that, as I said, is Turn it off. If you're upset about Clinton, don't waste your time protesting. You certainly have the right to peaceably protest, but maybe what you want to do is go organize for the next election. I read a story today that said most of the protesters arrested in Portland, I think, turned out to have not registered or voted in the last election. So if they had simply voted in a lot of these places, Hillary Clinton would be president. They don't understand the Electoral College, because now, of course, the whole thing about the Electoral College is it's racist. It's based in racism, which is not the case. You know, yes, it had to do with the citizens that were black in the South that weren't citizens and weren't considered human, and they wanted to balance it out. But more importantly, they did not want a mob to decide who the executive was. They wanted a state check on that. And so that is what the Electoral College is. If you voted for Trump, well, then you'd better get ready to defend him, because the next election cycle is really already upon us. In about 2 years, the balance of the Senate and the House is going to be decided. So if you're for Trump, you're going to have to be out working for Trump. Just braying and screaming and yelling isn't going to solve anything or get a Republican House or Senate elected for him. And the same for the Democrats. So if Trump won key states with thin margins, don't believe the canard that somehow this was historic and that somehow an electorate that was pro-socialism and loved Obama one day has suddenly become racist, women-hating, knuckle-dragging, and fascist the next, just because of a stupid presidential election. It's just the presidency. It is still the same country. People still have the same ideas they had before November 8th, and they will have the same ideas they have now. They change slowly. It is still the same country, and the people who voted Democrat or didn't vote Democrat can very easily come out on the next go-round and vote for a Democrat if they want. And turn off the damn TV. Well, I didn't mean to rant. I guess I did. I'm sorry. I hate ranting, but I'm so frustrated with all of this crap that is being spewed, and it's not going to stop. The only way to make it stop is to just turn it off and understand that it's all a fantasy. If you want the fantasy to stop, it's all about reading and thinking about what you're thinking about and, you know, developing a discipline where you actually become your own country, your own sovereign, mentally, if not in fact, and really try to be positive and try to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem by getting in the middle of all this shouting and screaming. And if you went and worked for a candidate, I don't care what was a Democrat or Republican, good for you. If you work for Republicans in Minnesota in the legislature or Democrats, good for you. If you worked hard for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Joe Schmo or Gary Johnson or anybody that ran, good for you. And if you're involved in politics and trying to make a difference and in the ranks of the Republican or Democratic Party, good for you. I don't always agree, but at the same time, at least you're doing something, and those people should be celebrated. So don't forget that. Now, part of these ideas and part of the leavening for this came from Mobile Podcast Man, which of course came from exgovernmentcars.com. You've heard the pitch as far as the Chargers and the police Ford police sedans and SUVs and Expeditions and Yukons. They're great vehicles because they're fleet maintained, then they're made ready for you, and they've had one owner, and that, of course, is the government. So I guess the government is doing one good thing. They're creating a market of Yukons and Expeditions and Ford police sedans for people like me. Check it out, xgovernmentcars.com. They're open in Golden Valley, 2420 Nevada Avenue North. Get your butt down to xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Pilots, if you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, I just watched this video of a pilot taking off and crashing on the runway. And, you know, I don't know much about flying. I've certainly been educated as to what lift is and what an angle of attack indicator is and how much power you've got to add. So this guy takes off and pulls back the power too quickly, and you can just see it and the lift. And once that plane dumps, obviously you can't recover. So the motto for Alpha Systems is pilots fly safe. They want you to be safe on takeoffs and landings, and that is why they make the angle of attack indicator, which gives you a visual indication of how much power you need to add to keep the plane in the air. And it's critical at low altitude. It's critical when you make the final turn for the runway. It's critical on takeoffs and landings. Bottom line, Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary evolutionary angle of attack indicator at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes. Tune in on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Really appreciate the subscriptions on iTunes and TuneIn and Stitcher. You can listen to them on blogtalkradio.com. And I really appreciate the likes, the shares, and the favorites. Despite all the nasty words about Facebook and Twitter, I do appreciate that. I just don't necessarily want to interact. I love YouTube and I love Instagram because they're just fun. Thanks for your donations also for mobile podcast command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, I didn't want to talk about politics, but just as in the words of Michael Corleone in The Godfather 3, just when I'm out, they pull me back in. Thanks for listening to podcast 573, The Bob Davis Podcasts.